Hello, Bulls fans. Welcome to Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast. Thank you for joining us on this episode, one where Will and I get to revel in our abilities as prophets. I say that because if you tuned into the show last week, we here on Bulls HQ predicted a 3-0 week with the Bulls to beat the Hornets, Knicks, and Nets. And what do you know, Bulls fans? The Bulls did exactly that. So with that in mind, Will, how much credit do you think we should bestow upon ourselves for what the Bulls achieved over the last week? Do you think we should take all the credit here?
It's got to be 100%. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. We are completely responsible. And I think because of our success, we're going to make this a recurring part of the show where towards the end of the episode, we'll look ahead to the games that we have for next week and we can make some predictions. And I think, I mean, if we want to just continue to say 3 or 4-0, we can do that, but our record won't be great. So we'll see how that goes. But I do think it's fun to do a little predicting.
Yeah, for sure. It's not an element we've done a lot previously, let's say, on Bulls HQ, but maybe it's a one-off thing. I know some random luck here, but nonetheless, it appears to be working. So maybe we have to keep going with it. But look, moving away from the shenanigans here, like there's actually a ton to discuss in this episode. Obviously, we're doing weekly podcasts here, and for whatever reason, like an amazing week from an on-court perspective. Obviously, we talked about the three wins, and we'll get into those three wins a little bit later on the show. But from a news cycle point of view as well, like there was a lot to actually discuss with this Bulls team. Like we got a resolution on the tampering investigation. COVID has come back and reared its head. There's, you know, issues going on with other teams that may affect like the Bulls as well in terms of, you know, Portland and their chase for Mark Eversley. So there's a lot to actually discuss here. So maybe we can start with the tampering investigation because this was seemingly going on for months and months. We had no idea when a resolution was going to come. It didn't sound like it was going to come anytime soon. And then randomly mid last week, we get the news that essentially, the Bulls just received a slap on the wrist type punishment. I mean, they lose a second round pick as a result of the tampering investigation. We don't really know when that second round pick will be lost, but maybe we can get into the minutiae of that, Will. But more generally, I mean, what were your initial takeaways from the league, I guess, taking away a second round pick from the Bulls?
Yeah, my first reaction was that it was pretty light punishment. When was the signing originally? It was like August, right? So like
August 1, something.
Yeah. So it's been a while. We hadn't heard anything from the league. And then all of a sudden, the report comes out and basically the Bulls will lose their next available second round pick. So, just in terms of reaction to that, I was pretty surprised. I had a little bit more time to think about it, and this isn't like an apples-to-apples comparison, but just thinking about the punishment laid out for Nikola Jokic and Markieff Morris after their little, I don't know what to call kerfuffle. That, where Jokic kind of took a hit from Markieff and then proceeded to body check him, you know, while Markieff wasn't looking. That was only a one-game suspension. And then the LeBron and Isaiah Stewart thing happened, and I believe that was only a 1 or 2 game suspension. And so I think generally speaking, the precedent for these kinds of violations are not super high. But at the same time, tampering seems to be something that the NBA wants to crack down on. And then you set this precedent that, you know, the Bulls can lose a first round pick or a second round pick in the future. I would say it's well worth it to get Lonzo Ball in the door in our building, as they say, as John Paxson says.
yeah, for sure. But I guess that was the worry because like the Bucks were the last team to get or go through a tampering investigation. I think they lost a second round pick, but everyone assumed that Bulls and the Heat too would be losing maybe something a little bit more substantial given in this instance, they got their guy through the door, whether it was Lonzo or Lowry, whereas the Bucks in that previous instance didn't get Bogdanovich. So in that sense, like I guess from that point of view, that precedent, we assumed maybe they were going to lose a first round pick. There was rumors or conjecture that maybe, there would be a fine from a dollars point of view. There would also potentially be suspension for, you know, general managers, executives, Arturos, those sorts of things. Obviously, none of that really played out. And to be thinking or fearing the worst of like, and maybe the worst being losing a first round pick, which the Bulls don't have a ton of, to go from that to then just losing a second round pick, which the Bulls may not have a second round pick for years and years out from where we are now. So like, it literally is a slap on the wrist, And just, I guess, just based on all the noise that was surrounding this thing and, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, to walk away with this being a potential loss of a 2026 for a second round pick, it's just like, okay, whatever, I'm going to continue to tamper. That was my overall takeaway. I'm like, how is this going to stop us from tampering in the future? Like, it won't, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think just from a, like, from a penalty standpoint on the league's behalf, it's very difficult to, like, target evidence that would suggest that teams are, like, talking to players before the window for them to be doing so legally. And yeah, it just seemed like it happens to every team. Every team does it. Every team tries to do it. The Bulls, of course, signed their guy immediately after the free agency doors opened. And so they were kind of being the ones that are picked out to be made an example of. And this was the example. It's fine. I think in terms of, just so we're all caught up on like what pick it will end up being. So the Bulls do not have their own second round pick until 2026. So we've traded away all of our second round picks in various trades for DeMar. I can lay them out, but basically DeMar trade, the trade last year, which happened at the deadline with Daniel Gafford and Tice and all those guys. And then 2024 goes to the Pelicans and Lonzo, and then 2025 again to the Spurs for DeMar. They could potentially be getting a second round pick in from Denver this year, but that would be protected 31 to 45. And so assuming basically the Nuggets make the playoffs, the Bulls will get their pick. And at that point, it's like a mid 40s, like early 50s pick. And again, the value of that is well worth getting Lonzo for. So if it isn't this Nuggets pick, if that doesn't convey, then it will be the 2026 pick, meaning the Bulls don't have their own second round pick until 2027. Again, I think we're all on board with that punishment as far as getting to have Lonzo.
Yeah, for sure. And look, if you really value second round picks, you can always go and buy one too. Like, so if in the event that the Bulls were to lose their 2024 pick or their 2026 pick, whatever it may be, like, you can always obviously trade for another second round pick. You can buy another second round pick type thing via a trade. So from that perspective as well, like, it's not a huge asset to be losing. And now obviously, you know, with their second round pick this year, they got through Io, and, you know, maybe down the track we'll be, you know, doing some revisionist history, and maybe whatever pick they do convey turns out to be a really nice player. Who the hell knows? But the point is, in the scheme of what could have been, I guess how the Bulls could have been punished, this is very light-handed. So it's just amusing, I guess, that it took 4 odd months to get to this point. That's the part that doesn't make sense to me, but look, it is what it is. I won't complain more, given the result.
One more piece on this is, I think, I can't remember who tweeted this out, but I saw somebody say that essentially, like, the reaction for when the Bulls sold their pick, which I believe was like the early 30s pick to the Warriors that became Jordan Bell a couple years ago, and the difference between that and losing this pick and the reaction. It's just like, the difference, I think, for me is that you're like, actually it's going towards using something and not just like getting a few million bucks back in the door worth of equity to Jerry, you know? Yes, it sucks because the Bulls can hit on guys like Io in the second round, who had an incredible game against the Nets this week, and we can get more into that later. But at the end of the day, these picks are being made use of, even if it's not a player coming through. It's through these trades or, in this case, a free agent signing. So I'll take that all day as opposed to just like selling them off.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's 4 years later and people still don't understand why people are annoyed about the selling of the Jordan Bell pick. We won't get into it now because, you know, if they haven't caught on in 4 years, then they're not going to catch on now. But it had nothing to do with just the specific player. But yeah, I take your point. But nonetheless, a really good result from that point of view. Like, that just added to the week for me. Like, we can talk about the wins later on, but it just set the mood. Now, maybe things that didn't necessarily set the mood, I guess, was speculation that, and it's probably more so speculation than actual hard reporting here, but with the Blazers firing Neil Olshey in Portland, there were reports from Chris Haynes suggesting that Bulls GM Mark Eversley may be a candidate that will be strongly considered for the lead exec role over in Portland. So I guess whilst we were reveling and celebrating the tampering investigation, this was I won't say this news was concurrent, but it was, again, another key storyline and something that's of note, because to me, when I saw this, like, I was a little bit, not surprised, but I was a little bit scared, let's say, in the fact that, you know, given what Eversley and Karnišovas have done here in the space of very short time turnaround, and particularly like Eversley and his importance with, you know, bringing through DeMar DeRozan specifically, like, I'm actually quite concerned now that, you know, that Eversley may leave the Bulls, and that there were reports that that's not necessarily going to happen, that it is just a speculation. But at least from my point of view, like, Karnišovas to me strikes me as a guy that needs someone next to him, like Eversley, who's more the relationship-based guy, the guy that really knows the players, knows networks, and you leave AK in the back to be his stoic self, who's scheming and strategizing and those sorts of things. So he's a perfect offset to AK. So I would be really scared to lose Eversley, and I guess I'm basing that just on some very high-level reporting. Obviously, we know nothing much about these guys, but what are your thoughts about Eversley being linked to the Portland job?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like mimicry is the best sign of flattery or whatever. Like, they obviously think that Eversley is doing a really good job, and you know, obviously, I think all of us agree with that. He's been monumental in just two off seasons and one trade deadline, and totally reshaping this franchise from what it was to what it is. So yeah, I think it would be, you know, I wouldn't say a disaster, but it would definitely sting to lose Eversley. I totally agree with your take on it in terms of him being more of the relationships guy and them balancing each other out really well. I will say, Chris Haynes is obviously like a great reporter, but he has his own great relationships around the league, and I think they inform some of his reporting. So I know he and Damian Lillard are really close, and that could just be sort of something that Dame is trying to get out there as far as like what his preference would be. It's all speculation. It was one of the few names that came out, so maybe a point of concern there. But yeah, I guess until we hear anything else, just cross our fingers. I do think that this position would be a pretty like notable step up in terms of hierarchy. To go from GM to like president of basketball operations is a pretty significant thing. And you could imagine how that would be, a really appealing place to go, you know, take over, whether it's trying to sort of reboot, rebuild, or retool around Damian Lillard and the group they have there. So it's definitely, you know, an interesting spot for a potential GM to go take on a role. But hopefully, just having been here for, you know, such a short period of time, he's still invested in what we're presently trying to build.
Yeah, and whilst it would be, you know, a promotion of sorts, it's hard to look at Portland now and really take them seriously. Like, they're kind of a bit of a rabble at the moment, which is not, I wouldn't necessarily concern myself with that, but given that the Blazers owe their first round pick to the Bulls, or at least is protected, lottery protected, like, I want to see them make at least one more postseason, preferably, you know, eighth or something like that in the West.
Get that.
But yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on there in Portland that just doesn't seem right. It sounds like Chauncey Billups after every game is just questioning the team's effort and intensity and all that sort of crap. And yeah, whenever you start hearing that, particularly this early in seasons, you can tell there's just something going on in that locker room. So I would imagine, like, yes, it's a promotion, but from a pure, I don't know, being part of a good organization, let's say, and it's funny to refer to the Bulls as a good organization at this point, it still feels a bit odd, but that's effectively what they are now, whereas the Blazers are a complete shambles at this point, and who the hell knows what's going to happen with Lillard, with CJ McCollum, all that sort of stuff. So maybe we have that working in our favor, that the Blazers aren't necessarily the best organization right now. So maybe that sways him to stay, and maybe he puts in a few more years here in Chicago. The Bulls keep winning, and maybe that bolsters his credentials for another job. Who the hell knows?
Yep, I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that one. Should we get into this Thad Young quote that came out the other day, which, you know, I think basically, his role has been really minimized this year with the Spurs. Obviously, the Bulls sent him over there in the DeRozan trade. And he basically goes from being like almost the offensive hub on the Bulls to getting, you know, a handful of minutes per night. And it sounds like he's frustrated. I mean, he's saying that the situation is not ideal. But I think, Mark, a lot of Bulls fans are clamoring to get him back, but that doesn't seem like it's a real possibility.
Yeah, and look, I included this in the rundown, and it's not really Bulls news, but it's Bulls adjacent, let's say. Obviously, because we all love Thad Young. We appreciate what he did for the Bulls last season, despite, you know, last season being a tough season. But, you know, you always hear that, you know, the Bulls need another big guy. Well, we've all speculated about this. They need to go out and trade for another big. And everyone keeps coming back to Thad Young. And given the fact that he's not playing in San Antonio, everyone's like, well, let's trade for him. Or maybe he gets bought out and maybe the Bulls can sign him once he is bought out. But the reason why I wanted to note this on the show was the Bulls basically can't acquire Thad Young this season. There's no way from a cap point of view that it's actually going to be allowed. So because they are the last team to trade Thad, in the event that he is waived, they essentially can't reacquire him. So the only reason I wanted to note this is so unfortunately we can be the bearer of bad news and just kill people's dreams around Thad Young returning to the Bulls this season. Not really possible. Maybe next season it's something that can happen, but yeah, Thad, for whatever reason, isn't getting much time in San Antonio. I'm assuming, you know, they're doing a soft tank of sorts. They're winning games. I mean, they beat the Warriors the other night, so they're not completely terrible, but Thad is going to be a trade candidate. I understand why Bulls fans want to have Thad Young walk through the door again, but it's just not feasibly possible based on the way the CBA is set up. So that's the reason I wanted to note it down. It doesn't necessarily change the Bulls' perspective this season. I don't even know how much Thad Young would be playing this season, to be fair, but you know, we just have to put it out there that unfortunately, in the event that the Bulls do look to acquire some other, you know, players, whether it's big or otherwise, it won't be Thad Young, unfortunately. But I guess, like, it would be kind of handy to have Thad Young right now because the Bulls are basically down two or three rotational players. I mean, Kobe this week went out with COVID. Then, you know, a couple of days later, after the Knicks game, Javonte Green out with COVID, misses the Nets game. And this all comes off the bat of Alex Caruso having, you know, hamstring issues where it was improbable that he was going to play in the Nets game. He did get up for the game, played the first quarter, didn't return to the game, and is now doubtful for the game against the Nuggets on Monday night. So, you know, we're talking about depth pieces and how it can't be Thad Young, but geez, it would be nice to have someone like Thad Young when you've got Kobe, Javonte, and potentially Caruso all out against the Nuggets on Monday.
Yeah, I think if there was one, obviously, like, people can have their opinion about the DeRozan signing and the cost to acquire him. But I think if there's one critique of the roster construction right now, for me, it's the depth. And you enter the season and Kobe has the shoulder injury. He's not playing. You know, third game into the season, Patrick Williams goes down and he's out for the year. Now you have Nick Vucevic misses seven games with COVID, and now Kobe's got COVID again, and Javonte Green's got COVID, and Caruso's hurt his hamstring, and it's just really hard to. I think all the teams in the league are dealing with this to some capacity, but it's really difficult to like get through a season healthy, and if you can't do that, it can be really hard to be one of those 50 plus win teams, because I think a lot of that, just regardless of how good you are, is reliant on health and availability. And so, you know, we bring up Thad Young because I do think somebody who fits that mold of a big defensive player who can pass a little bit and who can sort of be a connective piece, whether it's in the starting lineups with Caruso and Pat out, or maybe coming off the bench and sort of facilitating the offense in that role the way he did last year. I do think the Bulls have some room to make a move here at the deadline. Whether Kobe or Javonte or Derek Jones Jr. are involved in that, and maybe the Blazers pick that you mentioned. But I do think, just given in general, maybe they need another piece, but given all the injuries and just the way that you know, we've seen sort of a need for a big wing defender who can be a connective piece on offense, I think is a really glaring weakness in the rotation.
Yeah, and to your point, like, depth matters maybe more this season than other regular seasons in past. I mean, it always matters. And teams that are typically towards the top of their conference generally have, you know, great depth. But with the league being so flat right now, where there's literally a couple of games, so, you know, separating like second in the East versus 10th in the East, for example, like there's four games between the Bulls and the Hawks between second and 10th at the moment. Like that, so much of this is going to come down to depth this season. I think ultimately where teams finish and how they, I guess, manage the depth issue. But when you've got Kobe out with COVID and Javonte out with COVID, and then you've got Caruso with the hamstring, like obviously, firstly, you hope Javonte and Kobe get better and get healthy as quick as possible. That obviously goes without saying. But, you know, something happened between the Bulls and Hornets, I'm assuming, because the Hornets have got four players out. And obviously, these two teams faced last Monday night. So the Hornets have LaMelo out. They've got a Mason Plumlee, I think, is out as well, and Terry Rozier. So, like, teams all season will be tested from a rotation standpoint, from a depth standpoint. So, like, depth really matters, but with so much of the league as well sort of clumped together where there's only a couple games separating each other, there's going to be so many buyers at the deadline, you would imagine. And I don't know if there's going to be enough sellers to sort of suffice or give every one of these teams that want to be a buyer, you know, exactly what they need. But, you know, to the point of this week that we just got done watching as well from a Bulls standpoint, like, this team went 3-0 last week with three really solid wins. Let's just call it three really solid wins. But, I mean, that game against the Nets was so damn impressive. Like, I don't know how you feel about the Nets. Like, I don't rate them as, you know, the premier talent here in the Eastern Conference. I still think that's the Bucks based on how the Nets are currently constructed. But nonetheless, I mean, whenever you have Durant and James Harden, like, you're obviously a really damn good team. But, like, the Bulls went into Brooklyn. It looked like they were going to lose that game at one point, at least at the half. They were getting dominated on the glass. It didn't look like they really had it.
They started the game down nine. I mean, it was just a lazy start on a Saturday evening. And go on. But I totally agree. It was a very, very impressive win given all the injuries.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, exactly. Like, you're down Kobe, you're down Javonte entering the game. You had just played the Knicks and had a really good win there. Like, you had beaten the Knicks and the Hornets earlier in the week, coming up against the Nets to end your week. Like, it wouldn't have been, you know, unforeseen for them to drop this game. And to your point, like, they got down early, they got smashed on the glass, which was, you know, concerning given that the Nets are not a good offensive rebounding team. They're actually 30th in the NBA, but the Bulls just allowed them to have every single offensive rebound in that first half. So the way it was sort of trending, you assumed that the Nets were going to romp the Bulls in the second half, but they found a way to win this game despite the odds being maybe against them. And, I mean, this really just speaks to this point around the whole depth piece, but making a trade in season, because I don't know about you, but, like, I mean, I felt this earlier in the season anyway, but as we watch more games going on, the more I become convinced of this team being a real team, let's say. I won't say they have a great shot at a title right now, but I think they do have a shot at a title. And after watching the Bulls play the Nets and matching Kevin Durant and James Harden, who albeit didn't play their best games, but nonetheless, like, the Bulls are right there with teams like the Nets. So you have to strike now whilst the league is kind of wide open, because it is. Like, there isn't, to my eyes at least, like, just a walk-away team that's going to absolutely romp home this NBA season. Maybe some feel differently with the Warriors, but we just saw the Warriors lose twice last week as well. So I guess my wider point, Will, coming back to speaking about these specific games, but, like, whilst the Bulls went 3-0, they got good wins against good teams above 500 this week. Like, essentially, these wins just reaffirmed to me, like, we have to go in all now, because you never know when this opportunity will arise again. You never know if you're going to get this season from a 32-year-old DeMar DeRozan next season or the year after. Like, this may be his best season ever. Like, if next year he comes back and he's 10 or 15% worse, then did your window just close? So I want to see the Bulls make the most of their window, no matter how big or small it is at the moment. But to me, the more I see of this team, the more I think they have a real chance if they do make that one extra little move.
I couldn't agree more. And I think what you said about DeRozan applies to Vooch too. I mean, you've already seen.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen whether he'll be. I mean, he was much better in the Hornets. I mean, just absolutely dominant in the Hornets game. In the Knicks game, he was great. He was pretty quiet in the Nets game after a pretty good first quarter. But basically, you're working with, like, two of your three best players in their early 30s right now. And yeah, I mean, they could slip 10 or 15% at any moment. And with the lead being as wide open as it is, I think it's going to be a really good test to see how AK and Eversley can sort of operate on the margins, right? Last year, I think we all can agree some really good moves to shake up the roster. You know, Wendell and the picks going out, maybe they overpaid for that, you could argue, but I think it set a clear direction and that's worth the price. Daniel Gafford's obviously like having a really good year in Washington, but to get Tice back and basically get rid of all these other sort of trimming the fat, I guess, and getting rid of all these peripheral pieces to set yourself up. And I think this year, given the way that the play-in has changed the way that teams are operating, the fact that the East is so strong, I mean, the Cavs are great. The Hornets are great. The Knicks are out of the play-in tournament at this point at 11 and 12. The Raptors are right there. I mean, there's 12 teams that could feasibly make the playoffs in the East, and the West is not quite as deep, but you still have at least 10 teams that are really competitive there. And so I do think it'll be interesting to see what they do to add to this team, because they have hedged a little bit on their bet to go all in on like established guys, right? Like they still have Patrick Williams. They still have Kobe. Io's been playing big minutes lately, and they've got their pick this year and the Blazers pick this year. So they still have some pieces to work with, meaning they haven't gone like fully emptied the war chest here, but maybe it's the time to do that, just given the fact that the league is pretty wide open. There's, I would say, five or six true contenders right now, but none of them are the 2017 Warriors, right? So it's not crazy to me that if this team makes a move, they could get to the finals, and those opportunities don't come very often. I mean, the last time the Bulls were this good was 10 years ago when Derrick Rose won MVP. And the time before that was 1998. So this is a time to make a move, and not many teams are going to be sellers. So I really wonder what they're going to be able to do.
Yeah, and look, to this point, like the league is so bunched up right now, but there is only four teams at the moment who have a top 10 offense and defense in terms of offensive rating and defensive rating. Like those four teams are the Warriors, the Suns, the Bulls, and the Bucks, as presently constructed at the moment. Those numbers all obviously shift day to day, but that's how it stands at the moment. In terms of net rating, the Bulls are one of the four top teams. So, like, maybe things change towards the end of the season where, I don't know, for whatever reason, this position right now changes. Like, maybe DeRozan doesn't sustain this, or maybe they receive an injury that completely alters their season, or I don't know, maybe COVID strikes again and you lose Zach or DeMar for 2 or 3 weeks and that really impacts you from a standings point of view. Like, there's so many variables that can affect this season, but based on what we know right now and the type of season that you're getting from DeMar, I mean, like, go to the Knicks game, for example, where he completely turned that game in that fourth quarter, had 18 points in that fourth quarter period, basically turned up what would have been a loss to the Bulls into a win for the Bulls based on his own individual brilliance. And then you have the Nets game where both DeRozan and LaVine are just absolutely trading scores. Like DeRozan again in the fourth quarter, 13 points. Like those two as a tandem, you know, I mean, we as a fan base expected them to fit perfectly, but I dare say that, you know, even maybe the complete C-Red optimist expected this, but for me, from my point of view, like, I thought these guys would fit well together, but they've exceeded my expectations as a two-man tandem. So, like, as you sort of start to see these things come together, like, I don't know, like, you just got to strike, I guess is my point, and you never know when your opportunity or what your best opportunity will be, and I still sense this skepticism among the fan base, or maybe it's not skepticism, but, you know, they're just waiting for Patrick Williams to come back and just assuming once he comes back that'll just add to another layer to this team. But where I'm basically at the point where I'm like, just sell off Patrick Williams, Kobe White, whatever the else you need to sell off to add to DeMar and LaVine, and really go all in now in these next 1 to 2 years, because that's all you may get for the next 10-15 years, and you just got to maximize your best case scenario right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't say I'm a skeptic of this team, but I also don't view them as, like, you know, such a lock to make the conference finals or the finals that I would feel like super gung-ho about getting rid of all the remaining trade chips. But I definitely see the value in doing it. I see the point. And I think it's going to come down to like what opportunities are out there. So if there's a move that would require all those pieces, whether it's the picks and Patrick Williams and Kobe and Dirk Jones or whatever combination of those players and pieces it may be, go for it. But I don't necessarily think like just get rid of them to go get, you know, some sixth or seventh men rotation guys. Like I do think it has to be move. And, and obviously that will be, you know, there's like what, 2 or 3, maybe 4 months before the trade deadline. So a lot can happen with the standings, a lot can happen with COVID, as you mentioned. So we'll see how things kind of, you know, shake out, over that time period. But like you said, I mean, if they can continue to win some of these games, given the injuries, and it does just speak to how impressive they have been this year, especially DeMar and Zach, I think, yeah, strike while the iron's hot for sure.
Yeah, and like just further to that, like you get a game from Io against the Nets, for example, where not in my wildest dream did I expect a second round pick to have that sort of influence on a game this soon into this season. Like maybe what Io is doing right now is maybe what I expected or hoped for in year 2, 3, 4, for example, assuming he even hit it all. But to have him coming into games and, you know, playing the way he did against the Nets, like that's found money as well. What DeMar is doing to the level that he's doing at as well is like found money. Like people were talking about the cost that the Bulls paid to get DeMar DeRozan, the fact that they're paying $26, $27 million this season. I mean, the reality is based on DeMar's production right now, he's playing like a max level player. So like you're getting max level production from a guy who's earning $26, $27 million. Like again, that's found money. You've got Vucevic who's starting to round into form. Like if he gets back to the level that we know he can play, again, found money sort of thing. So, and we assume at some point, like Zach will get over his thumb injury and that'll turn up even more. So I guess there's a lot of things going right with the Bulls at the moment. And you know, obviously that can change very quickly, but like even game to game, things are just seemingly, you know, going as well as you could possibly expect. So I don't know, like when I watch this team and the fact that they're getting these levels of performances from support players, like Caruso goes out, he was guarding Durant. You expect at that point when he goes out, the team to lose. Like, why wouldn't you expect that? Like you lose your best perimeter defender. You've only got Lonzo. Lonzo's, not a great matchup for Durant. And at that point, you know, on the road, you expect to lose that game. But you get performances out of Io. Derek Jones Jr. does his stuff off the bench. Like even Tony Bradley came in yesterday and had some decent minutes. So like they're getting performances from every single player in all of these games where, yeah, look, they've obviously had their challenges. We just spoke about all the COVID stuff, but they just keep finding ways to turn up and to beat, you know, their opponents. And this is a team sport. And right now the Bulls are just one of the better teams in the NBA. And obviously a lot of that credit goes to Billy and the way he's coached this team. But I'm hoping that Arturis and Eversley are thinking a little bit more strategic, let's say, and I'm sure they are. But just are trying to seize this opportunity because the players themselves, the coaches, they've basically done everything you possibly can to make this season thus far as successful as it possibly can be. 16-8 right now. The Bulls are half a game off the best record in the East. It's crazy.
Yeah, I far exceeded what my expectations were of just like what this team could be. And especially as we keep on saying here, like the injuries just make this even more impressive. And there are teams like Bam Adebayo goes down with the shoulder injury and he's going to miss like 6 to 8 weeks. And that kind of thing could happen at any given moment. And so it's just all the more reason to like go in when you have the opportunity. And right now they do. Yeah, I mean, I definitely trust, given the track record at this point, that that the front office is like aware of the landscape of the league right now. And yeah, it's wide open. It's there for the taking. And as these teams start to fall into sort of position among themselves and decide whether they're going to be buyers and sellers, the Bulls have pieces to go out and get somebody. And whether that's somebody like Jeremy Grant or Harrison Barnes or any of these other names that have been floated out, I mean, I think they do have the ammunition to make a move here. And if they can just sort of like stay above water, stay afloat in terms of health and injuries heading into the playoffs, what they've done this year and just the level of play against the top teams in the league and against like the middle and lower end teams. I mean, there's no real like walkover games this year, with the exception of like, you know, a handful of teams in each conference, like the Pistons, the Magic, the Kings, the Thunder, the Rockets. Obviously they lost to the Rockets, so that's a bad example, but you know what I mean? Like, there's not just a lot of these teams that you can just run through every night. And so they are playing like a very legitimate team. They're competing at a high level against some of the top teams in the league. They've obviously beat the Nets twice now. They beat the Jazz. They got their ass whooped by the Warriors there, but a lot of teams have faced that. The Suns are obviously like streaking like nobody else in the league, but the Bulls are right there, and I'm really curious to see how they compete. I was looking ahead at the schedule. They don't play the Bucks for the first time of their four games until like the end of January, but I would just love to see them continue to compete at such a high level, especially against these good teams, to just reinforce this idea that like they are that good. They're on this level.
Yeah, and look, the reason why this makes a lot of sense to me is, I mean, they're built on a tandem where you have two of the best isolation scorers in the NBA. When things get tight, when things slow down, even against elite competition like Durant or Harden, or even as I won't call the Knicks elite competition, but you saw the difference in having just truly elite on-ball guys versus a team that doesn't have that, which the Knicks clearly don't. Like, in DeMar and Zach, the Bulls have one of the better two-man tandems in the NBA. And in the clutch this season, these two guys have won the Bulls numerous amounts of games. Like, we've been in situations all season where, you know, for various reasons, like, I mean, for example, the Knicks game, the Bulls came out and absolutely dominated that first half. They got very complacent in the third quarter. The Knicks got back into the game. We're going deep into the fourth quarter where things are virtually tied. And, you know, the Bulls pull away because they have DeMar and Zach. And against the Nets, they were able to out-duel James Harden and Kevin Durant because DeMar and Zach are just doing their thing this season. And a lot of what they're doing is being separated by, you know, their performances in the clutch. And I know you have some numbers on their performance in the clutch, but you read them to me before the show. I still haven't comprehended them because they're just insane how good they are. But maybe you can take the listeners through how effective Zach and DeMar have been in clutch situations.
Yeah, I think just before getting into the numbers, like, I've been thinking a little bit about how, I guess, why the Bulls feel like they're such a, like, just the way that they play, being such an isolation heavy team with your two guys that are like really shouldering the entire burden of the offense, compared to a team like the Warriors, where the ball is moving around a ton, where they don't necessarily have the same kind of star power that a team like the Nets would have. I think just like the style of scoring and the degree of difficulty of some of these shots that DeMar and Zach have been taking and making in clutch situations just makes it so impressive. And I think in some ways that might deter people from thinking that they're as legit as they are, because it just seems like it feels like, it looks like they're having to work so hard to like grind out these wins. But I think they're just that good. I mean, so here's the clutch spin so far. Combined, they have 91 points on 53% shooting, 34 from 35 from the line. And I think my favorite part of this all is that they have combined one turnover. Zach has not turned over the ball one time in the clutch this year, which is just wild considering, you know, where he was last year. It was so tough for him to close out games over the last 5 years that he's been with the Bulls. He just hasn't been able to do it. And adding in this other isolation weapon, to where now you have two guys, you can't really like decide how you're going to load up on them, because the other one can just pass it off. And it's just really impressive to see, you know, maybe these numbers go down a little bit. I mean, Zach, 52% shooting, DeMar, 57% field goal percentage in these clutch situations. Yeah, maybe those numbers drop off a little bit. But I think, yeah, they're really good. And I think the way that they score maybe makes it seem like a little bit of a mirage, but they just like, they win these games because they're kind of built for these moments. And I think that is such a huge advancement for Zach, whether he's like been the guy or not, in these moments, like having DeMar and learning how to read these situations is it's just going to make them so deadly when the playoffs come around.
Yeah, completely agree. And look, both deserve credit because they've found a balance in terms, and they've found it really quickly in terms of how they play out these final situations. Like, it's generally been DeMar controlling things, but Zach's been completely fine with that. And at the same time, like, he just finds a way to bob up and, you know, find his rhythm within these sorts of situations. I mean, he had a quiet 31 points against the Nets the other night. Like, just, he was so efficient. Like, I didn't know he had 31 points, I guess is my point. But nonetheless, like, this just speaks even further to what we were saying before. Like, when DeMar and Zach are doing what they're doing and teams are having trouble guarding them at the moment, they're having trouble guarding them despite, you know, having Lonzo and Caruso or Javonte on the court, as you know, in some of these key final fourth quarter possessions. So, like, in theory, you can send two defenders to the ball to guard DeMar and make sure you got a guy on Zach, because maybe you sag off Caruso because you're not really threatened by his three-point shot. Or as we saw against the Knicks, like, Lonzo was getting wide open corner threes. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make them. But when Zach and DeMar are doing what they're doing, naturally defenses are going to just start zoning in on these guys. So if you can just upgrade that power forward position specifically, and you can get in a Harrison Barnes or an OG Anunoby or whoever, insert whoever player you want to, you know, insert, but like another top 60 or 70 player, another real credible starter, it just makes it even harder for defenses to load up on DeMar and Zach, I guess. To that point as well, like, what they're doing at the moment, like, is there another level that they can get offensively where they're absolutely doing this right now, where maybe they make you question your sensibilities of what a good shot is, but because they're such elite finishers, like, can they even get to that next level if defenses can't afford to double or triple team these guys? And I don't know, like, that's something else to consider as well, as to another reason as to why you would go out and boost that four spot, because, you know, Zach and DeMar are doing some amazing things and they've found a rhythm with each other. This whole team more generally has found a rhythm with each other. But like, if you just add another piece, another legitimate piece, like, there's another level to this offense in which you can reach. Like, they're up to 8th in offensive rating now after being, you know, 13th maybe a week ago. But we all expected them to be, not expected, but had a vision of them being a top 5 offense. They haven't necessarily looked like that at this point. But if you can get a legitimate player in at the 4 who can give you, you know, 13 to 15 points and spot up from 3 and hit 40% of his threes, and could be a real third or fourth option, particularly when Vooch doesn't have it going, then again, that'll just make it even easier for DeMar and Zach to do what they're doing in the clutch.
Yeah, I think the last point about Vooch is a good one too, just because obviously, like, for the Bulls to be as good as I think they can be, they need Vooch to play at a super high level. But I do think bringing in one of those bigger wing four types could just allow you to play a smaller closing lineup if and when the matchups dictate. So, you know, we talked about Javonte or Derek Jones closing games at the four. If you get to the point where everybody's fully healthy and you have Lonzo, Caruso, Zach, DeMar, and you can shuffle in a Harrison Barnes or a Jeremy Grant or somebody like that who can help you play a little bit faster, who can be a little bit more switchable defensively, who can put the ball on the floor and, you know, continue to break down the defense after a rotation pass. I just think that the versatility is another thing that the Bulls still have to unlock here. And yeah, maybe it comes in the form of a trade. I think there were a couple flashes while Vooch was out with COVID, where Derek Jones looked really good in that small ball center role. And I think there's potential for him to continue to grow into that. But he obviously has flaws. And so upgrading in that space, I think, even if it just like helps the point that you made, even if it's just like to free up DeMar and Zach a little bit for them to be able to do their stuff, I think also just this idea of being able to be really versatile and to play any kind of style that they need to, because, you know, as you said, the playoffs are a different pace of game. It's a different style that you have to play in terms of how you get your offense and how teams defend you. And I think basically every night you're seeing a team prepare for that. And so I'm confident that when the playoffs come around, DeMar and Zach aren't going to be able to, or they won't have to change how they're playing, because they're already kind of built for this. And so building up sort of the rest of the foundation around them, it really sucks that Pat went down, because I think he is kind of that guy. And assuming he would have made a big step in his play over the course of the year. Absolutely could have been that player, but it is what it is now, and I think they have an opportunity to add. And yeah, we've got some time still, but I think that's going to be a big storyline moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. I guess for the moment, at least, it'll come through internal development. And I guess a key storyline from the last week is Vucevic finding his form against the Hornets. He basically didn't miss a shot. Or he certainly didn't miss a three. Six of six from the 3-point line, 30 points there. He scoring at the rate that he did with DeMar and Zach continuing to do their thing. Like, the big three gave you 83 points against the Hornets. Vooch backed it up with another really good game against the Knicks where you got 88 points out of the big three there. So, like, when Zach and DeMar are doing their thing, assuming he's still getting his touches, which he has been over the last week, like, and assuming he's obviously making shots, like, Vooch can be a benefactor of what DeMar and Zach are doing. And it makes it so damn hard to guard Vooch, as we saw this week, where, you know, defenses are funneling in on DeMar and Levine. Like, you can have Vooch sort of just popping out to the three-point line and using his really good face-up jumper, and he can just get clean looks day after day, just spotting up after spotting up off these guys. And we saw that this week. So I guess that'll be the case for the next couple of weeks. I mean, obviously, as we get towards January, February, we can start talking more about trades, and we'll be talking about it all season, to be fair. But, like, if there's internal development to come, like, it'll come through Vooch, and I guess that's an encouraging part of this week as well. And a key part of why the Bulls were able to go 3-0 is we started to see some signs of life from Vooch, which was really good. Like, he's starting to hopefully find some form, so hopefully that continues as well. And look, I know that the fan base was really harsh on Vooch, and I get it. Like, through his first 10 games, he was, you know, very, very poor, let's say. He had one or two decent games, but by and large part, he was poor. But I think we need to just take a step back and realize that Vooch is one of three players in the league right now who has a defensive rebound percentage greater than 25%, an assist percentage greater than 18%, and a three-point percentage greater than 36%. So, like, there's only three players in the NBA doing that right now, and that is Vucevic, Jokic, and Embiid. So to have a center that sort of is centered, you know, no pun intended, with, you know, amongst himself, or, you know, amongst those types of players, like, to have a guy that can credibly do that, can hit the glass, can pass the way Vooch does, but also step out and hit the three-point shot the way he can, like, he can be a real weapon to this team. So I was just happy to see Vooch break out of that mental slump he seemingly was in, and to have the type of performances that he had this week. Like you said, a little bit quieter against the Nets game, but nonetheless, huge performances against the Knicks and Hornets.
Yeah, I think he, you know, he definitely has not had a good start to the year, but he is such an important part of what this team can be. And again, just speaks to the fact of how impressive they've been so far, considering one of their, like, three most important players has missed a ton of games and not been his best. But those kind of stat line benchmarks are really an interesting reminder that, like, he is somebody who can be, you know, an anchor of defense and rebounding, but also certainly as sort of a short role playmaker, a guy who can make the right decision 4-on-3 and or just pop out and shoot threes at a super high level. And I mean, yeah, once you kind of turn that empty side pick and roll action that Zach and Vooch love to run, stretch that out, I just to the 3-point line, it's going to be so difficult to defend those guys if they're all clicking. And basically, we just need to hope that, like, when the playoffs start, they will all be on that right level.
Well, they've got a good opportunity this week coming up to continue that, specifically Vooch. So he'll be key, because there are some interesting, you know, center rotation battles coming up for Vooch this week. It starts Monday night against the Nuggets. You will hopefully see Jokic this time around. Obviously, last time the Bulls played the Nuggets, no Jokic, but seemingly that will be the case on Monday night, where the Bulls play the Nuggets at home. Wednesday night, the Bulls go up against the Cavs on the road. Now, the Cavs have been quietly quite good this season, you know, buoyed a lot by, you know, their front court. Evan Mobley and Jared Allen have just been amazing up front. I mean, Jared Allen has been you know, 5-year, $100 million deal that he received in the offseason, he's been worth every single penny of that. So Vooch has two really huge key matchups coming up this week. And then the Bulls close out the week Saturday night at Miami, where that team right now doesn't have Bam and won't have Bam for a number of weeks, as you mentioned, Will. So like this week and the way the Bulls will sort of perform this week will hinge a lot on Vooch. Like obviously we know at this point through 24, 25 games of this season, we know what we're going to get from DeMar and Zach, and this is going to be elite shot making. But if Vooch can sort of draw even or even beat some of these guys these week, then we're potentially staring down another 3-0 week for the Bulls. So should we go on record and suggest another win, complete winning week for the Bulls? Should we go on that on a limb and go that hard again?
I feel like once we decided, or I decided that I wanted to do this, that I started really overthinking it. So they're at home Monday versus Denver. Jokic, I believe, should be playing, but obviously Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray are out. They've been pretty bad. I think they're 3-7 in their last 10. So that should be a win, right? I mean, they beat the Nuggets in Denver for the first time in however many years. I feel like they should be able to take care of business at home. I think the Cavs game, so I'm going to call that one a win. I think the Cavs game could be kind of a trap. The Cavs, as you mentioned, are really good. Plus 2.6 point differential is fifth best in the Eastern Conference. They have Evan Mobley back. Darius Garland is playing at an all-star level. Jared Allen is playing at an all-star level. So I think they could be a potentially really tough matchup, but also don't have anybody to guard Zach and DeMar. So I think if they lose a game this week, it will be to the Cavs. And I was thinking like the Friday night, Saturday night in Miami could be a bit of a schedule loss there, but I do think they will go into Miami and win. So I'm going to go 2-1. I think they totally could, and frankly, they should beat this Cavs team, but I think if they lose a game this week, it will be to the Cavs.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. I think that Cavs game is a sneaky game. And I hadn't considered the piece around the Heat, the fact that they'll be in Miami maybe the night before and, you know, that Miami nightlife may claim them. But nonetheless, no Bam, I think they should beat the Heat. But I think what's important now that, you know, over the next few weeks, the Bulls will only be playing 3 games a week for at least the next 3 weeks, whereas previous weeks, there was times where they were playing 4 games, maybe even 5 games, particularly on those road trips. So, like, they've got some good pace in between their games. They can recoup now as well. So maybe that'll help them get through these weeks a little bit easier. And particularly when you're down rotational guys like Javonte, Kobe, even Caruso, who is doubtful for the Nuggets game, like having that extra day's break in between the Cavs and the Heat game, like, that really helps a team like the Bulls right now who are down rotational players. But yeah, I'm going to say 2-1 too, Will. I think we can hedge a little bit there. And I'm pretty confident that they can go 2-1. And assuming they do, they'll remain upwards at the top of the East sort of thing. So I'm pretty confident in it.
Yeah, I think also like they definitely like take their foot off the gas pedal a little bit sometimes in games after they get big leads. But they're not a team that like, you know, they're very focused. They know what's at stake here. They know it's like veteran guys for the most part. I'm not like worried about them going out in LA or in Miami or whatever. Like I think they'll go in and take care of business against a team that's been without Jimmy Butler and Bam. So we'll see if Jimmy plays in that game. But even still, especially having lost that one the other week, I believe in Chicago, right? I think they'll get that one.
Yeah. Let's call it. Let's lock it in. 2-1. We got the 3-0 right last week. I'm feeling confident we're going to get 2-1 right this week. But nonetheless, we'll obviously find out and we'll review how we went next week on next week's show. But maybe we call it here, Will. Thanks for joining me, mate. Thank you all the listeners for jumping on and tuning into Bulls HQ. Follow us on Twitter at Won't Gottlieb. You can catch me at MK Hoops. The Bulls HQ Twitter is at Bulls HQ Pod. Send us an email, bullshqpod@gmail.com. If you want to be part of the Bulls HQ Discord, drop me a DM on Twitter. I will send you an invite link. Alternatively, there will be an invite link in the episode description of this episode. 5-star reviews, all that sort of stuff. Heading into Christmas, give Will and I a Christmas present by for giving us some 5-star reviews. We would greatly appreciate that. But look, that just about does it for this episode of the show. Like we sort of touched on this week, very good week for the Bulls. I'm confident it will continue. And just the way that this team continues to turn up, why the hell would you not be confident that they're going to continue playing this well? And like we said, it all starts Monday night against the Nuggets. So be on the lookout for the next episode of Bulls HQ next Monday in your feeds, Bulls fan. We'll be back then to speak about all things Bulls. But for now, on behalf of Will and I, thank you for tuning in. Speak soon, Bulls fans.